The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, he was Turtle on Entourage. Now he's on the Starz Network show Power, and he's got his own podcast, Bad for Business. He's talking all about it right here on Talk is Jericho. I'm talking about Jerry Ferrara, very, very cool guy. He's going to give you the inside story on how he landed the Entourage part, all about the big budget Entourage movie, which is super, super great. Just watched it on demand yesterday. What his character's name should have been, other than Turtle. He's got stories about Kevin Dillon, Ronda Rousey, having her as his girlfriend in the movie. Moving to LA with nothing in order to pursue acting, getting booed at the Nassau Coliseum when he co-hosted Monday Night Raw with the Entourage cast, and how dropping 50 pounds in between seasons of Entourage changed things for him. The director did not want him to lose weight. All the stories from Jerry coming up here on Talk is Jericho. We even do a mafia fantasy draft, and you'll find out if Jerry loves sneakers in real life as much as Turtle did on Entourage. So sit back, relax, grab a bag of Nature Box snacks from your supply, and enjoy the ride with Jerry Ferrara. I'm grabbing my usual. You know I love them coconut cashews. I love them coconut cashews. I love them coconut cashews. Without them, don't know what I do. You can't beat Nature Box, right? What's better than having delicioso snacks delivered right to your front door? I throw them right in my carry-on bag, take them on the road with me when I'm out with the WWE, when I'm out with Fozzie, when I'm out doing all of these cool things that I'm doing. I gotta have some food. I gotta have the calories in there to stay going, stay sharp, stay rocking. Nature Box, they do the trick for me. They got hundreds of snack options, literally hundreds. Choices are endless, and with that kind of variety, you'll definitely find something that you like. Check it out at naturebox.com/Jerry. You like the popcorn? They got coffee kettle popcorn, jalapeno white cheddar popcorn, sweet kettle crunch popcorn. They got so many nuts and nut mixes, it's crazy. You can get them spicy or sweet or mixed with dried fruit. Nature Box has everything from roasted garlic pumpkin seeds to sweet blueberry almonds to salt and pepper pistachios. It's making my mouth water as I talk about it. They got all types of pretzels and granola. And if you got a sweet tooth, give the peanut butter nom noms a try. How about the mini Belgium waffles? Excellent stuff. You'll never get bored with Nature Box. You'll never be hungry with Nature Box. And they're constantly adding new snacks to the pantry of love as well. Here's something else great about Nature Box. They got the Smart Snack Guarantee. So if there's ever anything you don't love, let the Nature Box peeps know and they'll replace it in the next month's box. All right? Easy and satisfying. And right now, you can enjoy your first box of Nature Box snacks delivered right to your front door. But only if you go to naturebox.com/Jericho. And only if you do it now. naturebox.com/Jericho. Get your first box of tasty hand-picked snacks sent directly to your doorstep. These are the best snacks you're going to have. Eat Nature Box.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Okay, we're in the illustrious Beverly Hills Hilton with Jerry Ferrara. And this is funny because it's the first time we've ever met. One-on-one in a hotel.
We basically had like a blind podcast date in a hotel.
Yeah, which is funny. Like I said, how Hollywood is that? Like,
I love it.
You want the role, kid? Come meet me in the hotel, right?
We're going straight like 70s casting. I love
totally.
It.
Totally. And you go downstairs. This is a total 70s hotel too, with all the posters on the wall. There's like Sinatra. There's Rat Pack. I mean, this is a pretty long old school Hollywood institution here.
Yeah, there's like, I got caught up with the history of Hollywood, not so much like the showbiz parts, but like the actual locations. And this place, actually, this hotel is where like the Golden Globe party always is every year.
Okay.
So fortunate enough that Entourage has been nominated a few times. So I've stumbled out of this hotel room usually in January with a loss because we lost every single year.
How many times were you nominated?
Oh, for 7.
That's great.
It's just, I mean, to the point where it's like, give us a mercy win. I'll never come back. You never have to see me again.
It's like Susan Lucci for All My Children. It was like 19 years in a row or something like that. You guys had 7 nominations, though?
7 Globes, 6 Emmys, a combined 0 for 13.
Do you know, have you ever heard of the band called Mastodon?
No, I haven't.
They're a heavy metal band, and the drummer is a good friend of mine, and he has a shirt that says 3-time Grammy Award losers. You need to make that. Seven-time Golden Globe losers.
You know what? It really is cool to be nominated just to go to the party, but when you're there, if you have any ounce of competitiveness, which I know obviously you have.
Sure,
if you have any ounce of that,
yeah.
You get there, you want to friggin' win.
Yeah.
You see people start to go up there, make the speeches, thank their moms, grab the statue. Like, it just clicks. You're like, oh my God, I want to win so bad. Before that, night before, I'm like, let's just go have fun.
Right.
You get there, the competitiveness clicks in, and you want to win.
Especially when it's six times. And Emmys, too.
Yeah, the first few, we were really just like, I can't believe we're here. But by the fourth or fifth one, like, really, Ugly Betty's going to beat us again? Again? 3 years in a row? You couldn't find one for us in there?
And there's there ain't no Ugly Betty movie.
No.
I'll tell you that.
No, there certainly was
And there's
not.
There's always those shows that are like that, that are kind of the critics' darlings that mm-hmm. win. And meanwhile, a show like Entourage, like, that's a cool show. Like, that's for, like, the rockers. Like that's a cool-ass show.
Yeah.
It should have won.
And in the beginning, like first two, three seasons, like it was kind of underground. It wasn't widespread. Like we had a good fandom, but like it wasn't a household name. Mm-hmm. So you were like, cool if you watched Entourage because not that many people knew about it. This was before DVR and Amazon and Netflix and all that.
It just blew up.
Where you had to like watch it when it aired. But then when we started to become a little more mainstream, that's where it was like, oh, that show sucks now. Yeah. Like anything else with music, too.
Always the way, right?
Your song's on the radio, your band sucks.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I was like that with Metallica. They were my band until they became popular.
Then
you suddenly hate them.
Same here.
When you were up for the Golden Globes and the Emmys, what was the nomination that you were up for?
Best Comedy, which obviously was, you know.
Wow.
And I can actually remember each and every year that we lost. So we lost 7-6. And then Kevin Dillon, who played drama, received like 3 Globe and 2 Emmy noms.
Supporting nomination.
Supporting. Kevin Connolly played E. He got a lead actor in a comedy, lost. And Jeremy Piven, the only one who carried us with the awards, he won 3 straight Emmys.
Okay.
For supporting. He actually beat Dylan those 3 years in a row. So.
Oh, so they were up against each other.
They were up against each other. We always were worried they were going to share votes because it was the same show.
Yeah.
But Jeremy deservingly won.
There must have been some ball busting going on there.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
You know, like, I got you again, Dylan.
100%. And I always say one of those should have been Dylan's, but as long as it was Jeremy who won in his place, we were cool with it.
So how does that work? You mentioned votes. Like, who's voting on that? You guys?
No, there's you know, like with the Oscars, it's the Academy. Mm-hmm. And with the Golden Globes, it's the Hollywood Foreign Press. And with the Emmys, I think it's called like the Television Sciences. I didn't even know science and television were one thing. But there's these large panels.
There's electronics involved.
And, you know, you get to know these people over the years. Like with the Hollywood Foreign Press, we would do a press conference every year in this hotel. And then like I remember one of the Hollywood Foreign Press members came up to me this is a few years after Entourage ended, and was like, you know, season 3, blah, you guys lost by 1 vote. I was like, don't tell me that.
They
now.
Tell you that too?
10 years ago. Like, leave it alone. Don't tell. No, they're not supposed to.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell me we lost by 1 vote.
That's the worst.
The worst.
It's like watching your favorite team lose in overtime.
I'd rather lose by 30.
Bingo. Yeah, exactly.
Can't take the heartbreak.
So when you're talking about the ball busting and all that stuff, because the show Entourage, I mean, the crux of it and why it works is the relationship of the guys. But I would assume after doing this for 8 seasons?
Yeah, 8 seasons.
And then the movie. You guys pretty much, in a lot of ways, grew up together. You are those guys, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I was 23 years old when I got cast in the pilot. I'm now 35, a month away from being 36. So, you know, but it's something that we had right away. And I've said this before, like, you can't account for chemistry. I don't think in sports or in
You're
movies
right.
or TV, like, sometimes you don't get along off camera, but on camera you just have this magic. Sometimes you get along off camera, and then on screen there's nothing. You can't cast it. You can't account for it. It either happens or it doesn't. I think it's what takes a show that's good and makes it great. You know, it's like that next level, and
right.
it's the lightning in the bottle. And luckily we had it from day one. You know, those guys, and we all grew up in New York, so we had that in common early.
Okay.
And
was that a prerequisite for the
sort
audition?
Sort of. Yeah. Doug Allen, who created the show, who was a New Yorker himself, you know, because it was loosely based on Wahlberg, he wanted the Boston angle. Doug came in and said, look, I only know New York, and I could write New Yorkers, so
it's
it has
pretty
to
close,
be.
Though.
It's very close.
Fairly close there.
But, I mean, the ball busting, instant. Instant. Guys like Kevin Dillon and Kevin Connolly. Boy, Adrian had to get a little used to it. Like, he played Vince.
Yeah.
He's an only child, never had brothers. He grew up more in like the Manhattan. We were like borough kids. So
gotcha.
He was a little offended at first, but then he ended up being one of the all-time great ball busters toward the end.
We had a drummer once in Fozzie for a short time. You know, the mom jokes, that's the crux of any group of guys. And
sure.
He was like, "Don't you make fun of my mom." And it's like, dude, you can't be in a band and not tell mom jokes. You can't.
And the worst, but if someone else was to say a mom joke outside of your band, then they got to fight a whole band.
That's
and
right.
I'm sure
fight
that wouldn't go
gang.
Well. Yeah.
So you mentioned this, and I know kind of the story, but it was based on Mark Wahlberg's ascension into Hollywood.
Yep.
So was there actually a guy that was a turtle? Was his name Turtle? Was it a turtle type of guy? Or?
There was definitely a Johnny Drama who was still around. Who is still in amazing shape, and he still has abs, I think, and he calls him the Hollywood Squares. He'll lift up his shirt and show you the Hollywood Squares.
And he's still one of Wahlberg's, like,
still
entourage assistants, whatever.
I believe he was the one who might have started or helped start Mark into acting. That's how far back they go.
Oh, okay. So these are buddies from the old neighborhood.
Deep, deep ties. The E character is split. There is a real E. Who has absolutely worked with Mark for almost 30 years. And there's a few mixed in. Like, my character, there was a donkey, not a turtle. His name was Donkey.
Of course, okay.
But over the years, I've met five other of Mark's friends who have said they're the inspiration for my character.
Yeah, everyone's coming out of the woodwork now, right?
Of course. Yeah. And, of course, if you look at Adrian, who played Vince, there are some differences from him to Mark. So it definitely evolved over the years, but we all came from somewhere. And then Doug Allen started sprinkling in like his childhood friends into all of us. So it was definitely a chemistry experiment.
So it was originally, was it sold or was it just a pilot and you had to wait and get it picked up?
Pilot and you had to wait to see, you know. The casting process is one of the most grueling processes.
Well, tell us how that worked. Had you acted a little bit before that?
Yeah, I had moved here when I was 20 years old. I had taken some acting classes and theater classes in college, but fell in love right away after I realized I would not be any form of a professional athlete. That's what...
And where in New York were you from?
Brooklyn,
okay,
originally.
Brooklyn boy.
So I had been here for 2 or 3 years, and I kind of had this routine. I was working stereotypically as a waiter in a restaurant, and I would say I did 3 episodes of King of Queens, a sitcom from back in the day, and I would make, you know, $5,000. So I'd walk into the restaurant, I'd curse everyone out, I'd quit my job, I'd work on the show, I'd collect my $5,000 thinking, all right, now I got momentum. And I go 6 months without working, the money goes away, and I have to go beg for my job back. So that was kind of my thing. I always worked, but the Entourage obviously was the biggest opportunity in my lifetime. But it was like any other thing. I got called in for an audition. I went in, I read, they brought me back. And then they brought me back and matched me up with other guys. And then they did that 2 or 3 times. Now at this point, I know all the producers. I know, like, it's like a weekly thing. Mm-hmm. I just go in once a week. But it all leads to... You know, like the producers finally kind of approve you, Doug and Mark. Then the final test is the network. You have to go test in front of HBO.
Right.
And that's done in like a mini little theater where the lighting, like you can't see the faces in the crowd. There's probably about 8 to 10 people in the crowd. They're trained like not to laugh no matter how funny.
That's the worst too.
Yeah, no matter how funny you are. And also the waiting room, they basically bring, it's very much like in Entourage when Johnny Drama, when you see him audition, there's 2 or 3 guys who are there for each character. So it's like, here are the Turtles. I could look across the room and I see the Vinces. Yeah. I see the Erics. And of course, only one Johnny Drama was Kevin Dillon. Kevin Dillon at one point got up in the lobby in the waiting room and was like, who else is here for Johnny Drama? And I think it might have been Kevin Connolly. And we didn't know each other. Screamed out, no one. You got it, bro. And he's like, oh, well, I would have left if I knew that.
Because he was like, that's him, basically. You know, he's Matt Dillon's little brother who never really quite made it. He always had, like, I remember he was the lead in The Blob.
The Blob,
Maybe Platoon or something like this.
Platoon, The Doors.
Right.
He played Densmore in The Doors.
That's right, the drummer in The Doors, yeah.
And, but no one really knew Kevin Dillon as far as comedy. Like, you could look at Platoon when he smashes the guy's face in with a rifle. Festival and the Doors where they're doing shrooms and Joshua Tree, you know, but comedy and Kevin Dillon weren't known. So this was his first moment. And Doug Allen always says the minute Kevin Dillon walked in and opened his mouth, done.
He like, had
I got
it.
10 years with this guy.
Right
I got
away.
It done.
Right. Perfect guy.
So
he is that guy.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Or at least knows who that guy is.
Good call. Perfect.
And
right.
So when you're in this test, now they're really mixing and matching all of you, and then they start sending people home. You could see they're like, all right, you can go. So at one point it was finally left, and it was me, Connolly, and Dylan, and there was someone else for the Vince role because Adrian wasn't in LA. But three out of four, we were standing on stage, we read a scene, and then we're like, all right, you guys can go. And we walked out. We were the last four, and I was like, well, I think that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
And luckily, they called us like an hour later because then they could still make you wait for 2 days.
And what a mind screw
awful.
That is, you know?
It's mental warfare. Yeah. Man. It's awful.
By the time you finally get it, you're like, it's more of like a depressed relief than anything. Like, thank God it's over.
Right. Oh, but then actually, your point and question, that's the first stage of war. Then you get to shoot the pilot and you get all paid right. well. You get paid a nice chunk of money, but you're not like retiring. And then I think it was like 7 months in between when we shot the pilot till finding out they're picking us up to series.
That long.
And I'm caught in that in between because I did make a good chunk of money, but I'm like, well, it's starting to run out again. Do I go work in the restaurant knowing I could be on a hit TV show at any moment? So it was like up to the final moment. And one day Wahlberg called me. I didn't even know he had my number.
Oh,
wow. I answer. I'm like, hello. He's like, yo, it's Mark. We got picked up. Congrats. We start shooting, blah, blah, blah. Click. I'm like, I hope that was real.
Because for him, this is just another project. If it doesn't work out, he'll go on to do whatever movie he's doing, right?
Yeah, for sure. He's a movie star. But this was his first producing job.
So it's a passion project for him, too.
Yeah, he's gone on to produce 30 things since then, but this was his first. This was kind of his baby.
So when you guys started doing this show, because I mean, it's such a great show because, you know, as a guy kind of in the business, like there's so many cool things going on behind the scenes. You're seeing what Hollywood is really like. And for people that know nothing about Hollywood, it's pulling back the curtain. How was it for you actually being out here? Was it fairly similar to what's going on?
Now looking back on it, I could say absolutely. At the time, you know, I still was young and didn't really know. And I was very, when I say sheltered, like I was living in the valley. I wasn't like in the scene of Hollywood because I also didn't want to be because I didn't want to screw up. Mm-hmm. So even when I got Entourage, even more so I kind of hid because I just didn't want to blow it. I was always worried I was going to get caught up, go out, maybe have one too many drinks, do something stupid, and they're going to fire me. Mm-hmm. I was always so afraid it was going to get taken away from me. But I got to live through the show in a lot of ways. Like I discovered all like the cool places in LA through the show. I learned about all these restaurants and clubs and hotels like we were talking about. We've shot so many things in this hotel, like I can't even begin to tell you. Like there was like a bar mitzvah episode where Drama and Turtle are stoned and just looking for food that was shot here. Like I didn't even know where the Hilton was in Beverly Hills. So
now you know
it was like my Zagat survey, my Zagat
right.
guide.
Because you also had like the Chateau Marmont. There was stuff there, and you know the Roosevelt and all the cool kind of Hollywood places.
Yeah.
You guys were there, and then not to mention this, were you single at the time? Or did you have a girlfriend? Or what?
Early season one, I was. And that also just was where it's like, don't
chicks
screw
everywhere.
Up. Everywhere.
I mean, that's part of the show is the hot girls.
I mean, if I even like think back to the pilot when we were like shooting and it was, we had like this indoor pool in the pilot. And I just had never been on a set where it was like the four of us and these four girls. And we're supposed to have like this 2 day long party. So it very much, we had like, we called it like the franchise tag. Like if we saw a girl like franchise like that, like,
oh, you want like a repeat,
like
business?
Adrian, stay away from her. Like, don't go talk to her with your blue eyes.
It's my franchise.
Yeah. But I did get a girlfriend around season three for a few years. I probably was the most domesticated
mm-hmm.
of the bunch early on. And then I, you know, Kevin Dillon ended up getting married and Connolly as a girl. Now we all kind of also decided not to shit where we eat. Sort of thing, which
right.
is very responsible thinking.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, too, like I said, you are, you know, this isn't just a role. You're getting a part where all of this stuff, you're living the Hollywood high life through this TV show.
Yeah, and it really was a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways because we had so much fun and we did pull back the curtain. But then also, because perception is reality, unfortunately, a lot of the time. We're not even talking about like typecasting. I'm talking about just stereotypes. Like people then kind of assume, oh, like you're the guy who loves to go out and smokes weed and chases girls. It's like, man, if you only knew. It's just the part. Get over it.
It's, I always say when people sometimes will come up to me and go, oh, you know, you're such a nice guy. We thought you'd be a jerk when I'm like the bad guy in wrestling. I say, you know, Anthony Hopkins doesn't walk down the street in a straitjacket eating people's livers with a fine Chianti. It's just the part he plays. You realize that.
That's a great way to put it. I'm sure that ends a lot of the conversation.
It happens all the time, yeah, because people go like, I can't. Well, you don't really like to go party. You're turtles. Like, nah.
Do you ever play along with people, though?
It depends. I mean, I'm pretty cool.
Right.
Most people are nice. You know, a lot of times, you probably found this out, sometimes people don't have manners or just rude or nervous.
Yes.
You have to give them a little bit of an extra rope.
Agreed.
But then when they're just completely rude, then I'll just turn total asshole.
That's how I always base it. Like, if a person's, like you said, nervous or cool, you give them that rope, yes, and then, like, I'll play along with it. And but, yeah, if you're going to be an idiot, I'm just not going to talk to you.
Yes.
I'm just going to turn and walk away, you know, not because I think I'm too cool, but like I treat people how they treat me.
Yeah. And the thing is too, like, and once again, some of the lines you get, like, are you who I think you are? That's bad too. Cause like, how do you answer that? Like, yes.
You go, I am exactly who
I'm
you
famous.
Think I am.
Yes, I am. Or, you know, listen, I don't know who you are, but my kid loves you. Can you sign this for me? It's like,
I messed around with someone and I thought it was all in good fun, and the dude actually took it personally and like
what
wanted
happened?
To fight me because I had lost a bunch of weight like in between seasons
one year.
Man. So I started to get a lot of, you look just like, and I would joke around like, ah, yeah, the fat guy, right? Yeah, I know. Everyone says I'm like the skinnier version of him. And this one guy in a bar one night in Ohio, I was with my girlfriend who's from Ohio. We were watching the game in the bar, and like, I was just, I thought for sure he knew I was messing with him. So I just kept it going all night. I'm like, dude, stop. I'm not that guy. That guy's such a douche. Like, he's a, like,
yeah.
So he finally finds out after an hour and a half that I was joking with him and lying, and he was so offended and literally want, like, basically was like, you want to step outside? I'm like, dude, I'm not going to fight you, man. Like,
yeah.
I thought you would have thought it was like a funny story, but he took a lot of offense.
Because once you get that, it's like, you're not who I think you are. You're not turtle. Or yes, I am. No, you're not.
It's like, yeah, you got me.
Yes, you are. Yeah. But you did lose a lot of weight, and that's something I wanted to ask you about. I'm going to get to that after we add some weight to everyone's wallets. How's that for a segue? And you know how we're going to do that, Jerry. You know how we're going to do that? Talk is Jericho's Sexy Beast listeners by playing Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. That's right. I said Fantasy MMA. And first on my fantasy card, Ronda Rousey. She played Jerry's fantasy girlfriend in the Entourage movie. Man, she looked hot in that. She seems like a pretty cool chick. Plus, she could beat my ass. So Jerry's going to tell us how all that came together, what she's like as a person, what she's like on set. But now, all I need to do is pick four more fighters, stay under the salary cap, and wait for my instant cash to roll in. It's really that easy with DraftKings.com. Put your knowledge to work as well. I know you guys are MMA fans. You know the fighters. You know the advantages. You know the strengths. You know the weaknesses. So use that info to win yourself some serious cash Ola this weekend. And if you use my promo code Y2J, you can play for free. Here's how fantasy MMA works at DraftKings.com. You score points for significant strikes, takedowns, advances, knockdowns, and more. These are the biggest daily fantasy MMA contests anywhere, and they're only at DraftKings.com. Get in on the fantasy MMA action right now. Play to win your piece of the $1 billion in prizes that DraftKings has given away this year. $1 billion with a B, dollars in prizes. Come on. You don't want to miss out on that, do you? Hurry to DraftKings.com now. Use my promo code Y2J to play daily fantasy MMA for free this weekend. DraftKings.com, the official daily fantasy sports partner of the UFC. All you got to do is use my promo code Y2J to play for free right now at DraftKings.com. That's Y2J at DraftKings.com. Play fantasy MMA in the big leagues right now. Win a piece of $1 billion with DraftKings.com. All right, Jerry Ferrara played Turtle on Entourage. The show went 8 seasons on HBO, and then they made a feature film, which shows how big that show was. It came out over the summer. Critics weren't too kind to the movie, but I don't care. I loved it, and Jerry's got some thoughts on that as well. And I've got some more thoughts on living without my smartphone. Impossible. I feel like I need my smartphone as much as I need indoor plumbing and electricity, as much as I need the air that I breathe. All I need is the air that I breathe and a smartphone. Yeah. I do everything on my phone. It runs my business and my life. Something else helped me to do these days is buy a car. That's right. A couple months ago, I decided I wanted to buy a new car for the family, and True Car and the True Car app are helping me to do that. I need to buy a new car. It's about time. You know, you get the car starts getting a little bit grungy inside and starts kind of having weird smells. I got three kids that are spilling stuff all over the place and taking the shoes off, and the feet are starting to smell. And they're, ugh, you know, it's time to get a brand new car. So I went to the True Car app. It's let me check out the prices on the make and model of the car I want. I can see what everything costs and how much people who live around me paid for that same car. It's made buying a car so much easier. I don't have to spend hours down at the dealership searching for the exact model that I want, haggling over the price with Gypsy Joe, the sales guy. Don't have to fend off all the unnecessary extras they try and make you buy too, like a Jerry Lundegaard with the True Coat. You gotta get the True Coat, eh, Jerry? I don't want the True Coat. Not gonna have it. And with True Car, I don't have to worry about it. I can bypass all of the Lundegaards. True Car has created a mobile app that makes buying a new car so easy. It's so easy. It's really easy. All you gotta do is download that True Car app, and in 5 minutes, you create the car you want. You choose the make, model, special features, even the color. And once you have your specs filled out, you can see what others paid for the same car. I mean, others in your neighborhood, others that are going to the same dealerships that you're going to. That's what I've been doing, searching the kind of car that I want, getting all the features down, getting it all ready to go. And when I'm finding out what other people paid for the same car, guess what? You can lock in guaranteed savings from True Car certified dealers in your area. I'm talking an average, get this, of over $3,000 off MSRP. $3,000. I mean, who doesn't want $3,000? I do. You print out your guaranteed savings certificate, take it to the True Car certified dealer, and get your car. No hassles, no haggling, no headaches, no hours of wasted time. True Car makes it that easy, man. They got an app for everything these days. How much save you? $3,000, right? How much save you that big chunk of change? Do the smart thing. Download the True Car app. Save time, save money, save us, Y2J, and never overpay. Download the True Car app and do it today. All right, let's get back to Jerry Ferrar from Entourage. We're talking about you dropping a lot of weight a few years ago, Jerry. I mean, you lost
50 pounds. Yeah, I've put like 10 or 15 back because I try to lift a little bit, but for me, that's like, it was so hard to put on like 10 pounds. I got to a point where I couldn't put weight back on, ironically.
But I mean, this looks like your natural weight right now. You're slim and trim. I'm trying to imagine you 50 pounds heavier. And if you watch an
that is my natural weight.
Wow.
50 pounds heavier is my natural weight.
So basically, you're getting cast as Turtle, kind of the chubby guy.
Yeah.
And then over one season, you said you lost all this weight?
Yeah, I lost like 15 or 20 in between one of the seasons, and like I'd put 5 back on off, but then I want to say it was like between season 7 and the final season, because we did have the luxury of knowing when the show was going to end. Like in season 6, they basically were like, you guys got 2 more years.
Gotcha.
And then you're going to ride off into
this
whatever sunset. So I looked at it like, okay, I got to get to work to now try to change things after this, because I have no idea what life's going to be like after this. And also, I just was unhealthy, Chris. Like, mm-hmm. 205 pounds, I'm 5'7", barely, no muscle whatsoever.
Right.
Smoked cigarettes at the time. And I played sports all throughout high school. I played football, basketball, I boxed, so I didn't even know how I got to this point. And yeah, now that I think about it, it was actually a pretty dumb thing to do, to shoot one season where I was about like 185 and then come back a year later. But on the show, it was only supposed to be 2 weeks later, and I was like 145. Now I think about it, I'm like, God, that was pretty dumb to do.
Did the producers give you any, like, hey, man, Turtle's supposed to be a fat guy?
Doug Allen, who ended up, he also wrote, produced, and directed the movie, was like, would you gain weight back for the movie? You know, it was kind of like a nod back to the series. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to charge you like $100,000 a pound because I cannot go back down. Like, it was a really...
You're not going to pull a De Niro Raging Bull and gain all the weight, right?
Yeah. No, but rest assured, my cruising weight is 200 pounds. I like to be that way. If I take a week off from watching what I eat and working out, I put 10 pounds like that.
How did you lose all the weight?
Just started off because I can't do no carbs and all that stuff. Like, I went like low calorie at first, and I'm talking my workouts, I was only able to do like walking at 3 miles an hour on a treadmill for 40 minutes. That was like the most I could handle. Now I'm like playing basketball and boxing 2 days, but I just started a little cardio, a little weightlifting, very, very little. And just, I think I started at 1500 calories a day. which was tough. And after 2 months of that, after every month I'd add 100 calories. So by the end of like 6-7 months, I'm 2,000, which they say a guy my size, that's like enough to maintain and still lose a little here or there. Now I'm kind of on autopilot, which is nice.
But it's hard too because they got the craft services table with all the shit food on it. Like it's like that in the WWE too, the catering. Yeah. Like I'm a huge fan of cherry pie and cookies, and I don't have them in my house. But you go to work and they're all there. How are you supposed to not eat some?
Let me back up what you're saying. While we were promoting the Entourage movie, we hosted Raw.
I know. I want to talk to you about
that. The food was friggin' unbelievable. And we were sitting there for like 3 hours. We got there at 4 o'clock for like rehearsal. And obviously, you know, the show doesn't start till 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock.
Yeah, depending where you are.
So we're just sitting around and we basically were just eating for 3 hours while we were sitting in like the locker room of the NASA Coliseum.
That's what you do if you have the night off, which is not a good thing. It's like, who are you working tonight? Catering. Yeah, I'm in catering. I got catering duty tonight.
Yeah.
How was that to host Raw? Are you a WWE fan?
Oh, I always went, obviously when I was a kid, I was a huge fan. And then, like I said, I basically hid my first couple of years out here. I didn't know anyone and I wasn't even 21 yet.
Did
so
you move out here by yourself?
By myself.
Like you're going to go find your fame and fortune and LA's the place to be.
I had one friend who we ended up becoming roommates and all I would do, dude, because this also timed out around the time when a very popular wrestling game came out for Nintendo 64, which I'm sure people probably have brought up to you at some point. And I'm talking, I went years where I just would sit home and drink and hang and just play that game
was
and
it
watch
Raw versus
Raw.
SmackDown.
100%.
But is that what the
yes.
game was? Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And like to the point, I had to stop watching because I wouldn't leave the house. So I since had taken years off and then I go back in for a year and then I come out for a year. But yes, during your run was also during my run of watching. So
okay.
That's why I was texting you like a big fan of yours. Because
oh, cool.
I was,
yeah, right.
I was watching you for years.
Which is always cool when you meet someone with mutual respect. Because like I said, I've seen every Entourage, you know, big fan of the show. And you never know who's watching your work, but it's cool when you hear that.
100%, man. Like, I still don't believe, because Entourage is very popular in sports for some reason. Like, basketball players, football players, baseball players. I don't know if it's because they wanted to be actors at some point, and all actors want to be athletes, or just you're on the road so much.
Same type of vibe with your gang, you know, living the high life.
Right.
Sports guys
with
an
infrastructure
can understand that,
of
right?
your boys from when you were, like, childhood friends. Yeah. So. But yeah, I still can't believe it to see like Kevin Durant comes up to me or Derek Jeter is like, "Hey man, love this show." It's like, "No, man, you don't get to say that. Like, I love what you do."
Cuz you're a real huge sports fan.
Huge. That's my life, man.
So when you hosted Raw, what was your vibe of that? Like, what were some of the differences or what were some of the things that you noticed?
First of all, I always knew cuz also being working in television, like when I got a little bit older and I would watch, I realized, you know, this is such a major production, Raw and everything like that. So, but I still underestimated it because when I got there, it was even bigger than I thought. Just the moving parts, like, and talking to a lot of the guys there, just like, yeah, it's just basically a big, giant traveling. It's the biggest traveling circus in the world.
Yeah.
And really getting to see just the behind the curtain of that was, it just made it even cooler to me. And I respected even more, like the 2 minutes when I was backstage before we went out and introduced, you know, our guy.
Was it Zack Ryder?
Zack Ryder, yeah, from Long Island, which also Kevin Connolly was from Long Island, so it was a big.
And you guys were in Nassau Coliseum.
In Nassau Coliseum for like the last big event.
Right.
There. We closed the Coliseum.
Before it closes down, yeah.
I mean, it was slow motion. And I started getting dizzy. I started getting lightheaded. I'm like, wow, this is
because
you know,
it's
live
too. And, you know, when you're doing Entourage or acting, you get 5 takes, 6 takes. Let's do it this way. Let's try it this way.
And then, you know, Vince is back there behind the monitor, like directing shot for shot, like doesn't talk to anyone. I really had an out-of-body experience. And then, of course, we got booed, but then everyone had to explain, look, what you don't want is silence. Mm-hmm. If they're either going to cheer you or boo you, that's good. It's when you go out there and you hear nothing, that means they just don't know who the heck you are.
Right.
So either,
did they tell you you're going to get booed?
100%.
Yeah. Anytime celebrities come on for whatever reason.
Unless you're known as an adamant supporter.
Right. Or unless, like, we used to have guest hosts every week on Raw, like right. Saturday Night Live. Jeremy actually came right. and did it one
yes,
time.
Yes, I remember.
His
that.
Famous line where he said the pay per view
Summerfest. We killed him for that.
Did you really?
We had a line in our episode where we brought that.
Summerfest. Oh, you brought it back?
Summerfest. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
So we had all of the guys, and everyone just got lambasted, booed, booed, booed. The guys who didn't get booed, there was three of them. One, Mike Tyson, obviously, because he's Iron Mike.
Absolutely.
Two, Ozzy. Everybody loves Ozzy. Like, just, it's Ozzy. And the other one, who I thought was going to get murdered in Chicago, which is one of the craziest cities, Bob Barker. He came out there and people went nuts for him. I don't know why.
Wow, that's a bit of, I would have predicted a booing.
I was thinking they're going to kill him. But he came out there with 50 years of show business experience, man.
Come on down.
Yeah, with his little thin microphone.
Did he have the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is brilliant. That's brilliant.
Palm of his hand right off the bat. And I was like, of course he would. He knows. He's been doing this for 50 years. He's Bob Barker. Those were the three that just kind of superseded everything. Everyone else, boo, 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 boo. Because wrestling fans, for whatever reason... Even though you're a fan,
yeah.
you're an outsider coming into the world of
right.
WWE, you know, whatever it may be.
And I'm not, like, known publicly as a fan. Like, there's this other actor, his name is Stephen Amell. He's on the
sure,
show
of
Arrow,
course.
Who
yeah.
is always tweeting about wrestling. And
yeah, he actually worked at SummerSlam.
Right.
Right.
He just happened to be at the event, at that night's Raw. But just as a fan, as a, like, he wasn't hosting like we were. But once the fans knew Stephen Amell was there, but we were hosting, they flipped. That's what also fired them up. Like, why are these idiots hosting? We have a real life fan right here. He should be hosting. You guys suck. And at first, I was a little. I think I even mentioned it maybe to. I think I said it to Stephanie McMahon, and she's like, no, if they boo you, it's great. Don't worry. Yeah. But I was like, I don't know if I can handle this. She's like, shut up. You can handle it.
How does it feel, though? Because it happens quite often when people come out there and get booed, and they're like, usually people are cheering for us. You know, we're Emmy nominees.
You know, when we pre-taped the limo shot of us getting out of the limo, and then, you know, we had so much time in between, we were watching it in the locker room, and then you could literally hear, like, you're watching the feed. So we see us getting out of the limo. There's obviously the little delay. So we hear them booing out there. Just as, like, on TV. Then we hear them booing on TV. It's like, oh my God, we're gonna get killed out there. We're gonna get destroyed.
So you went out there and you introduced Ryder, and did you have, like, a little bit of a promo, as we say? Did you talk for a bit, or was it just, hey, how you doing? Here's Ryder.
No, we talked. Like, we basically came out. This was during when, like, Cena was basically taking like open matches. Like, mm-hmm. anyone who wants to challenge me, I'll put the belt up. So and I think Kevin Connolly may have helped get Ryder his shot, because he was a Long Island guy. This was a home game for him.
Right.
So we introed Ryder. We walked him down. We sat ringside. And then at one point, they were like, look, who wants to come in and maybe take a bump? I wanted to do it so bad. Like, everything in my soul was like, I wanted. And Kevin Dillon just answered first. He's like, I'll do it. So halfway through the match, Dillon rolls in, like, interrupts Cena. Cena goes at him. Ryder rolls him up, but doesn't get the pin, obviously, and Dillon rolls out. So that was, like, the extent of our...
Okay, that was the involvement, the interference during the match.
Yeah. Yes. And then I got to talk trash to Stephanie a little bit from Ronda Rousey was on, obviously, at WrestleMania.
That's
I believe
right.
it was armbarred, so I got yeah. to bring that up, because Ronda was in the Entourage.
He's in the movie, yeah.
So.
He's, and with you.
It was awesome,
if
man.
If you could last 3 minutes with
right.
her or whatever, you'd go on a date with
it
her.
It was an awesome experience. And they sent us a picture of us in the ring and stuff, and it took me about 30 seconds to hang that thing up.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
How'd that come about? Just through your publicist?
Yeah.
Or?
You know, that I've never really been a part of a promo tour like that. Like, I'd done some movies where we do, like, a week of a junket and we go to New York. I mean, but Entourage Promotions was just, like, I have
crazy,
never
right?
see. I mean, we were in, like, a different city every day. Hmm. And that's just something I've never experienced in my career ever. It actually made me kind of want to go back into television, because I don't know if I want to do, not that I don't want to, like, I'm being spoiled or anything. Like, that was more work than anything.
Life on the road is not easy.
I'm not a good traveler. I don't fly well. When I get out of my routine, I really just become a maniac. Like, I don't know. I'd love to know how you handle, like, you just get used to it when you do it
you
for
so
long.
You just get used to it, you know, and it's hard too. You're talking about your diet, you know.
Yeah.
Stay, you know, you have to learn a completely different way of eating even. You know, when you're traveling on a highway and all that's open is a, you know, Burger King or a gas station. All right, let's go to the gas station. What do they got? Hard-boiled eggs? Okay, are they the good ones, or are they the shitty ones that are already pre-wrapped
right.
with, like, some kind of weird water
yeah.
in them? All right, carrots, I can have those. Here's some almonds. Put some light salt on it, because it's driving me nuts just to eat shitty almonds, you know, water, whatever. But, I mean, it becomes part of your DNA. especially for me, I've been on the road since I was 19, whether it would be, you know, even being out here. I live in Tampa, but I come out to LA all the time for podcasting or to, you know, to do shows or whatever I'm doing. Then I got the band, then I got WWE when I'm working with them. You're always on the road. You really have to get used to it because it's not easy, and it has to become part of your routine.
Yeah,
is that there is no routine, like you were just saying. You know,
I started figuring out like calling in advance, like, does this hotel have a gym? Not because like I need to do it for my job or anything, but just only because I need to feel somewhat of the same routine I had.
Of course,
you know, when I'm home. And man, we were in three different cities in one day, which
that's
was brand new for
tours
me.
Like that's hard. Hopefully you were traveling on the studio jet at least.
There were times when we did get access to the jet because we wouldn't have been able to
make it.
We did something in New York. No, I'm sorry. We started in Connecticut at like ESPN, and then we did something in New York, and then we flew to Ohio to the TNT broadcast of the NBA semifinals, and I had to be back up in New York for the next morning. And that was where I was kind of out of it, and I thought, okay, the worst is over. And then we did the European tour, which was very cool, and honestly, life-changing for me because I had not traveled to Europe much, but you know, you get used to the time difference. And then, of course, I got the flu when I was in London, and the weather's different. But it sounds like I'm complaining. It really was
just different.
The first time for me.
Is this all four of you guys, all five of you guys going together?
Yeah.
Wow. So, because this was a big deal. Like we were talked about Entourage. It did 8 seasons, and then it ends. And then 2 years later or 3 years later, the movie comes out. That was a little bit of a space in between.
Yeah, basically from the time we stopped shooting to the show till when we began shooting the movie was about 2.5 years. Mm. And
did you always know there was going to be a movie?
No way.
Okay.
We at some point, it's kind of like a Jedi mind trick. I don't even remember who started this conversation of a movie. And obviously the Sex and the City movie was so successful, and that's why I always got mad anytime any interviews they were like, well, you know, you guys think you could do with the Sex and this. No, they made like 400 million. It's one of the biggest movie openings in comedy of all time.
Well, once again though, you got Sarah Jessica Parker, who was a movie star before she started Sex and the City, right?
Yes. And also I don't have facts to back this up, but I believe it's known women go see more movies than men, especially 18 to 30 year old men. Like me, you, and like 5 other dudes aren't gonna go watch a movie.
Right.
I'm not saying just because it just doesn't really happen, but 5, 6, 7 women at a time were going to dinner and going to watch that Sex in the
Especially
City movie.
When it's like a chick flick about a chick show.
Right.
Basically, a girl's show.
And they had a bigger audience than we ever had, and we knew that. That's why we always had our numbers in our mind of what we'd like to hit while all this hype was built up. Sex in the City for men, it was never that.
But for an HBO show, like Entourage was a huge show on HBO, what kind of ratings was it doing for an episode?
I think in our final season, like our average was 3 or 4 million.
Okay, so
a live show, which is great. And then, you know, they couldn't track DVR numbers back then yet. But to give you an example, like Sex in the City's final year, they were like 11 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were a giant.
That's a juggernaut, right?
So we were that was making us all very paranoid. Like, wow, so if we don't make $300 million, we're a failure because we're gonna fail.
Yeah,
you know, I guess you could say numbers wise, it certainly was like a disappointment. Mm-hmm.
As far as the final gross.
Yeah, like there's two sides of the story, like. Those 3 or 4 million viewers per show that we knew we had showed up. Mm-hmm. They all showed up. It was the people maybe who casually watched from afar, like they saw some, and they didn't necessarily show up. But then, you know, we're already number one on iTunes, and everyone's watching in hotels and stuff like that.
I never saw it in the theater.
Right.
I wanted to go, but you know how things go.
Of course.
Busy, whatever, whatever. And also knowing in the back of my head, I'll just watch it when it comes out on video on demand.
Right. You're going to be in a hotel at some point.
Exactly. Right. And I think it was 2 weeks ago, and I watched it in Toronto, as a matter of fact, on video on demand.
Right.
And I thought it was great. So I think that's this day and age, how things are judged as far as that old school mentality of what's the first week's gross? What's the first live rating? It's more about let's look at it a year down the line and see how it did with video on demand and DVRs and replays and all this other stuff.
Yeah, and it was a big learning lesson for me too, because, you know, I'm not that I'm big into social media in a sense where like I enjoy it for what I think are good purposes, but you know, the negative side of it, you know, and I, but it actually was a great lesson for me because, you know, it was weird. The critics were really harsh to the Entourage movie, but the fans were unbelievable. Like Rotten Tomatoes, you familiar with Rotten Tomatoes? Yeah. Like our critic review was like 36%, which on Rotten Tomatoes is like all time low. But our fan review was like 99%. And our cinema score, which is like they call it like the exit polls when people leave the theater, right. They poll people A-, like so you can't buy that score.
Your fans were happy with the movie, right?
Right. But I also learned, like, if you're writing a story, I think the headline that people would read more was like, the Entourage movie sucks and here's why, as opposed to the Entourage movie's pretty cool for the fans and here's why. Mm-hmm. In the click universe that we live in, I think that headline is what's going to get the most clicks.
The most hits, right.
Yeah, I just learned that, unfortunately, negativity in social media still kind of sells more than positivity. Only in the sense of movies and TV.
Well, and that's kind of the vibe of social media is that everybody wants to comment.
Right.
And what's the fun in saying, I love this.
Right.
It's a lot easier to say, I hate this, this sucks, this is terrible, right. This is the shits. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the vibe of what social media is. So if you're going to wade in those waters, you got to know that you're going to deal with that. And don't let it piss you off.
I mean, there was some jokes that even I was like, wow, that's a good one.
Oh.
Wow. We were actually like screenshotting Entourage jokes, sending them back and forth to each other. Like, guys, I got to say, this hurts my feelings, but this is also a damn good joke.
Was the one you remember?
Oh, man, God.
Just like bad reviews.
It'll come to me at some point.
Well, what was the difference? Let me ask you this then while you're thinking. You know, you had a very rare thing. It's a TV show that's turned into a movie with the same cast, same production, same director and everything.
Yeah.
What were the differences? How was that going from the television show to the movie?
You know, in a weird way, it was better in a sense because, like, when you're doing the show, and you know this too, you've been on crazy schedules, like, we would only have 6 or 7 days for an episode. You're shooting 3 or 4 episodes at a time. Like, you know where the season's starting. You never know where it's ending because you're getting scripts. But
I see.
Whereas with a movie, here's the whole story. Here's the beginning, here's the middle, here's the end. So on an acting front, it was cool because you could do some things in the scene that, say, is at the beginning because you know also, I know it's going to this place.
Ah, okay.
Whereas with the show, you're shooting episode 3, you have no idea what episode 9 is.
Oh,
so
I see.
As an actor, that's kind of
It's hard
cool.
to paint a picture
right.
when you don't know what you're supposed to be painting.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
And you know, I could talk about the differences, both negative and positive, from TV to film and all that stuff, but that was great as an actor. Other than that, you know, we had mostly the same crew. Obviously, everyone came back, and
let me ask you, what about from a financial standpoint? Is it the same type of money that you make, or is it because it's a movie? Does it get bumped up?
I guess if you and I tried to figure out like the formula to equate TV to the movie. I guess it certainly was better. But also, you know, like, if you look at it like this, like, the movie would have been, like, 4 episodes
worth. I gotcha. Okay, I understand.
Of salary. I understand. So that. But that being said, you know, when you do TV, you get to do 8 months. You make more in one single year of TV than you do doing one
just
movie.
But
we only shot the movie for 6 weeks.
But there was a lot of great cameos in it. Once again, you're talking about the cool factor. Everybody wanted to be in that. Who were some of your favorite people that were in that?
I was a sucker for the people we had on in the show who kind of returned. Guys like, you know, Andrew Dice Clay, Bob Saget.
Yeah, he was,
you know,
great on
he's,
on
he's
that,
always
yeah.
good. We had Gary Busey popped up and Jessica Alba. Like, the people who were there in, like, season 1 and 2 when no one knew who the hell we were and what we were. Mm-hmm. It was just cool. But then, you know, we had the whole front line and the LA Kings were in the scene. We had, you know, Rob Gronkowski from the Patriots. Like, I'm obviously the sports fan in me gets excited for that. I mean, Warren Buffett just popped up. It really was like, who's
on
today?
The cart in the back lot or whatever it was. Yeah.
It was just crazy. Like, like when you would see the call sheet, it's like, all right, Warren Buffett's in the morning. Pharrell's coming in at night. It really was surreal.
Because you don't even know who's in it. You're just looking and reading, you know?
Because, like, that's the thing. Like, and that's what Doug Allen did so well. He did a lot of things well, but this I just couldn't wrap my head around, where at the beginning of the day, you know what you're supposed to shoot, and then it's like, oh, hey, John Favreau would love to come on and do something. How do you work him in? And he'd have to sit down at 6 in the morning and figure out a way for John Favreau to do a scene at 2 o'clock in the afternoon where it's not like here's John Favreau. Yeah. It's more like, let's weave him into the fabric of the movie. And he did that better. I mean, I don't know how the hell he did
that. Because everyone wants a line. Of course. Know, or something. I just did Sharknado, and it's like, same thing. I was only on set for 3 days, but you look at the call sheet. It's like, oh, Bo Derek.
Right.
David Hasselhoff and, you know, Michael Bolton.
And they're not showing up to stand there.
That's the thing, right? Like, you're not just going to go and, like, you know, bump into him as he's got a tasty freeze at the Universal.
Oh, the best one was probably, if you remember the sequence where we had, like, the party scene where we were going to screen the movie.
Yes.
And so we had all that nighttime stuff, and we were shooting the daytime stuff, and then we got a call saying, oh, Mike Tyson's in town. He'd love to come by.
Right.
And again, it's like, what do we, and, oh, and he has like his daughter with him. It's like, okay, all right, let's figure out how we can, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we worked him kind of in, and it totally worked.
Because I remember like on the old Cosby Show, there'd be like a knock on the door. Like,
right.
Oh my goodness, it's Stevie Wonder.
What are you doing here?
Hey, why are you here? I'm like, oh, I broke down or right. whatever. You know? You actually have to add it in there and make it sense. So that's not quite how it worked out with Ronda Rousey's guest appearance in the Entourage movie. We'll get to that story. But first, I want to tell you how I got to the Beverly Hills Hilton to talk to Jerry in the first place. You guessed it. What did I use? I used Uber. I'm telling you, easiest way to get around LA when I'm in just for a quick trip. And you guys should know by now that I asked the driver what it was like driving with Uber. And of course, I got the standard answer. He said he loves driving with Uber because he makes really good money. He loves the flexible work hours. I hear that from everyone who drives with Uber. Some of them have full-time gigs and drive with Uber to make a little extra cash. Some are students who drive with Uber in between classes to help pay for the education. Some are aspiring rock musicians or struggling comedians driving with Uber so that they can have their nights free to play shows. No matter what the reason, they all love the result, the extra money they make, the flexible hours, being their own boss. And if you want this, if you want to make this type of cash, you should sign up to drive with Uber today. Easy to get started. You need two things, a car, check, a license, check. So if you need flexible work hours doing a job that will actually pay you some good money, you need to drive with Uber. You just open the app whenever you want to work, then drive for a few hours or a few rides. It's completely up to you. Now is the prime time to cash in driving with Uber. You'll thank me for telling you how to get paid each and every week. And who knows, I could be the one getting your car when you drive with Uber. Jerry Ferrara could be the guy getting in the car when you drive with Uber. You don't know. A lot of people take it nowadays. You got a car, you got a license, put them both to work for you, start earning serious life-changing money today, make your own schedule, be your own boss, and make the money. Drive with Uber today.
Hey, did you see Shaq tearing it up with Jimmy Fallon?
No. No.
Yeah.
We did a fake thing where one of the writers does an impression of you.
What's his name?
His name's Arthur.
Arthur, I'm going to kick your ass out of
here. No. Well, Jimmy is going to be on Shaq's podcast pretty soon.
Yeah, it's a big podcast with me, Shaquille O'Neal, on Podcast One.
You're so used to doing it with me, Shaquille O'Neal, yeah.
And when Jimmy's not there, you can always bet Adam Sandler, Kobe Bryant, Michael Strahan, Justin Bieber, Charles Barkley, Neil Patrick Harris, Kyrie Irving, or Ludacris might show up. Oh, wait. They already did.
Gosh, it makes us laugh. It's good. It's fun. And there was one where you interviewed Kim Kardashian, and so we had snippets of that on the show.
That's my favorite one.
Download your favorite episode of The Big Podcast with Shaq now at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Talk is Hawkins. Talk is Jericho.
So we're talking with Jerry Ferrara about the Entourage movie. Right to the point, man. How was it working with Ronda Rousey?
Amazing, man. Yeah. And it was weird how it happened because the storyline was already there. And this is also something Doug had to do where he would write something with a cameo in mind, but you don't always get
hoping
that person,
to get that person.
Right?
Yeah.
And I want to even say maybe initially, and I might be wrong about this, it might have been initially for like Rihanna or something like that. Someone where it's like, are we really going to be able to get Rihanna? Mm-hmm.
Shoot for the top.
Right.
And then go from
and
there.
Obviously the answer was no. Yeah. So then it become. Then you start to get to a point where it's like, all right, well, if we can't find anyone, we'll maybe just have to write it out. And that kind of was like my whole storyline in the movie. And randomly, thankfully, I have the same agent as Rhonda, Brad Slater at WME. And, you know, this is now 2 years ago, so Ronda was obviously well known, but what she's done in the last 2 years, right. I mean, she's gone to the
she's
next level.
Massive, yeah.
So Brad kept saying, like, you know, what about Ronda for the cameo? And I immediately was like, that's cool as shit. That, to me, that's like a great move for Turtle. Makes him cooler initially. And yeah. Obviously, I love the physical angle of dating a girl that could absolutely whoop my ass.
Yeah.
And Doug knew who she was, but wasn't, just wanted to meet her. So we had a breakfast meeting with her and were blown away.
And are you there too?
I was there. Doug was there. Brad was there. Ronda was there.
Okay.
And he went home immediately. He was like, done. The studio signed off. He wrote that in. And then we kind of came up. He came up. We worked on the stuff where I get in, you know, the Akhenaten. I tell him, like, dude, she has the most famous armbar in the world. So yeah. If you don't do that, you're really kind of doing a disservice to everyone. And honestly, Chris, she just, not only is she an unbelievable athlete, you know, we hung out before and I got to know her, and she's just a great person, man. It's all legit. That what you see is what you get. It is not an act. She's not playing up for, you know, her brand, so to speak. It just so happens that her brand reflects who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally legit. And I like, now seeing what she's gonna, like, I'm kind of like Adrian in Rocky. Like, I watch her fights, I'm in the crowd, like, just crying and screaming. Like, I feel like Adrian in Rocky. It's reverse Rocky.
I said I was doing a some promotion a few months ago or weeks ago, whatever. It all blends together. But I mentioned that I think Ronda Rousey's done more for, you know, the empowerment of women than Hillary Clinton. I said Hillary Clinton could get into the presidency, 50% of the country will still hate her. Ronda is kicking everyone's ass, starring in movies, doing all this great stuff, and 99% of the country likes her.
Right.
You know, she has done more.
She just won't be denied. Like, her biggest obstacle is going to be, is there anyone who could give her a real fight? That's going to be her biggest obstacle in terms of fighting.
Are you a UFC fan?
I am. And a lot of it has been through her. Like, I always watched, but I mean, boxing for me was the first sport I ever watched. Like, I watch every single boxing match that's on television. And I had a moment of snobbery. I never really, like, outwardly speaking down on MMA or UFC, but like, oh, I just like boxing better. But I couldn't stay away from UFC and from MMA, and then obviously getting to know Ronda and some other fighters. And then also I've had the chance to train a little bit with the Gracies right here in Beverly Hills. You know, I just got a whole new appreciation for
it. Which Gracie
did
you work with?
For Heron.
Heron, okay.
My man Hero, who's just, keep it friendly.
Yeah.
Let's keep it friendly, yeah, until you hurt me.
Right.
And now I just have a whole
What
new
do you
respect.
Think the issues are with boxing nowadays? Because, I mean, it's obvious. I'm not a major boxing fan, but I definitely am a fan.
Right.
And it's obvious that it's gone downhill over the last 10, 15
sure,
years.
Yeah, sure
I have
has.
Theories, but what do you think?
My biggest theory is that the best don't fight each other.
Due
That's
to politics?
My main. To me, when you have a young guy, let's say, who now is starting to enter his prime, say he's 25-0 with 18 knockouts, and it's like, okay, this guy's the next. They still will hand pick, kind of slowly roll his fights in. And if he loses, that's it. He's got to start all over again. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the UFC and in MMA, if you lose, as long as you fought hard and put on a good show, like, that loss is like a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in boxing, if you lose a 12-round decision and it's not the greatest fight in the world, you're now 25-1. You're not getting the title. So you got to go all the way back to the beginning. And while I do respect that, you know, I think it makes everyone super safe in who they fight, because they want to, like, you know, I got to have the best chances of winning because I got to get to 26-0, because if I want to fight Floyd and get paid, I have to be undefeated.
Right.
And whereas in the UFC, you could still get that big fight and you could be 15-5. And as long as you fought hard, you could still get that big fight.
I think one of the issues for me is that there's no big heavyweights as far as popular.
That too.
Charismatic, because we had such a run through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I mean, it was a, you know, a domino effect. One led to the other. Tyson leads to, you know, then you had the Sphinx era, the Egyptian fighter,
right.
Maybe you've heard of him. But, you know, Sphinx, and then you had, you know, Larry Holmes, and then you had Foreman,
Lennox Lewis,
and then, of course, Holyfield. But then we kind of just hit a dead end there where there's not the if it, not an Ali or Tyson level guy even on the horizon.
Yeah, and you want to know why? Because Muhammad Ali is playing tight end. You know, Mike Tyson is playing fullback, meaning if you're that size and that physically gifted to be a heavyweight, you're playing football most likely.
Or maybe going into MMA.
Right? Like, honestly, like if you're 6'4", 235, with amazing footwork and hand speed, someone is catching you in high school and saying, hey, you got to come try out for the football team. Like, I feel like boxing has become harder to discover for a lot of young athletes, especially of that size in the heavyweight division. Because, you know, I'm 5'7". If I would have been 5'7", 150 growing up in great shape and talented, the odds of me really becoming a pro in any sport is slim to none. Boxing, I have my own weight class.
Yeah.
And I just think if you're that size and in America, you're playing football most likely.
What do you think of Floyd?
Well, you know, there was some news today. I don't know if you heard that he and it's all hashing out. So I'm kind of just spreading the gossip mill. But it was on like SportsCenter that he before the Pacquiao fight, he got an intravenous of like water and vitamins to rehydrate, which what he took wasn't illegal. But you're not allowed to intravenously take anything before a fight. And there was that whole speculation, Pacquiao before the fight was trying to get a cortisone shot in his shoulder, which is legal, but you have to apply for it way before the fight, and he didn't do that. So they said, you can't take anything intravenously, and Floyd did, though.
Wow.
So that just came out. I don't know how that's going to shake out or if even that report is true, but that was the gossip mill today. I have a lot of respect for Floyd Mayweather as a fighter. I do think that he has a style that is one of the best styles we'll ever see. It's not the most crowd-pleasing, for sure.
It's not the most exciting.
And look, he's smart. He maybe knew that and became the ultimate villain. People, I'm convinced, buy his pay-per-views to watch to see if he loses. Yeah. That's all that's left.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is that he and I did Larry King a few years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah, when he had
a great episode.
He was actually doing WrestleMania. He worked a match against Big Show.
Yes, that's right.
And so we were all on promoting it, and I always got along with Floyd. I ran into him 5-6 times, and good guy. But we were talking, and he said just that. He said, "Listen, man." He said, "I love wrestling." He said, "I understand what I'm doing here. I want people to hate me, to buy the pay-per-views, to see me get beat." Then he went into Florida. No one's going to beat me. Right. No one can beat me.
Right.
But they're still paying to see me lose. And I'm cool with that because I understand that's my job. So you're right. I mean, he is totally working that way. But also, I don't know with the style that he has. Plus, with the reputation and momentum, I don't think any judge is ever going to – I don't think they're going to vote him to lose a fight.
You have to knock his ass out. Yeah, or at least knock him down a bunch
of times.
I mean, I talk about it with my friends all the time. I could count 3 times that I saw him cleanly hit. That's it.
Yeah.
I think Zab Judah did it years ago, and then he dominated. Shane Mosley did it for sure. Yeah. Rocked him. I was at that fight. And Maidana did it 2 years ago. There's only 3 times. He's fought 48 times.
Point.
He's been hit cleanly. Yeah. I'm talking like, oh, where you jumped up and thought maybe he was hurt. 3 times.
He's too weaselly. Too wiry.
You know, I did a movie called Think Like a Man, and then we did a sequel for it, Think Like a Man 2 in Vegas, and Floyd did a cameo. And then sure enough, like you meet him, he's a cool guy. Yeah. Like you almost feel like, okay, he certainly knows exactly what he's doing with a bit of a character he maybe created. But out of nowhere, he just starts shadow boxing while we're waiting for the next shot. And he's like, at the time, I think he was 46-0. He's like, man, 46 have tried, 46 have failed. Yeah. No one could unlock the Da Vinci Code. And he believes it.
Just in his own mind in the back room.
No one asked him to do that. Right, he was standing around, 70-person crew. He's off to the side doing that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So,
you mentioned doing the other movies that you did. Is this the end of Entourage? Has the story been told now, or...
Yes, yeah. The story has been told. I think we all deep down kind of knew it was the end. I mean, if there was some financial craziness that went on, if it did Sex in the City numbers, like we would all be ludicrous to not do a sequel. Mm-hmm. It didn't do that. And that's why we kind of shot the movie with the intention of there's a lot of closure there.
Right.
You know, like there's no open-ended, well, what's going to happen now? Like you could go on and know that those guys are going to be all right, and it kind of ended. So, unless there was some...
Is it hard to say goodbye to the character after 10 years of being Turtle?
No, honestly, because I really felt like shooting the movie was that for me. Because the hard part, the emotional part of saying goodbye happened at the end of the show. For me, like when gotcha. when they called rap on that fine, the very last thing we ever shot, the show ended with three of the four guys getting on one jet, and then right. the Eric character with Sloan getting on another, and they're just heading separate directions. Mm-hmm. The last thing we shot was us rolling up to the tarmac in the old Lincoln. That was our last shot ever. So when they called rap, I mean, I had to walk away. Because I cried.
I'm sure everybody felt the same. All the other guys.
Yeah, but believe it or not, I don't know, Connelly and Dylan, I walked away by myself and I cried. I know they were for sure emotional and handled it their own way, but I guess I'm maybe, I don't know, I'm more of the emotional sensitive guy. We're all sensitive in our own ways, though. Yeah. But for me, very much, like, that was the goodbye. Because also I had the fear of not knowing what was next. Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to work again? Is this like, how hard is it going to be to punch my way out of this box I'm in?
Because it is hard out here. You mentioned earlier, you know, when you got the King of Queens or whatever. Acting, it's hard because you don't know. You had one of the most enviable things, a steady gig
yeah.
for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And once it's over, you got to start from scratch again, or how does it work?
Yeah, well, look, like I said, we had that luxury of knowing when we were ending, and I was already on like the fitness train, so that helped, because perception is reality. It's unfortunate. It sucks, but what people see is what they believe, and all they saw of me was the stoner sidekick, so that's what they thought I was.
Right.
And a lot of, and it, the same goes for the movie business. Like, I'm auditioning for these movies, and they were like, oh, you know how many times I've gotten this is the reason why they can't cast me, and it's very frustrating. But it's just ironic. They say, like, you know, he's too well known.
Right. We overqualified.
We feel like it's going to take the audience out of the movie if they see the Entourage guy pop yeah. up. Like, they're automatically going to start thinking about Entourage, and it'll take them out of the movie. Well, I guess on the surface, I could make some sense of that, but then I start getting competitive. I'm like, well, if you don't direct a shitty movie, yeah. nothing will take people out of it. Because you know what? I've seen movies that are great with cameos or people who are known who fit right in, and it didn't take me out because the movie was good. I've seen bad movies where I'm jammed with
sure.
a big known person, and it's taken me out a little bit because the movie was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I started from the beginning. I didn't have a movie career. I really didn't. At that point, I had not been in any movies, so I was doing two scenes here in Battleship, three scenes in Lone Survivor, and then I got a good part in Think Like a Man, and then I started to build this momentum only to lead me back to the Entourage movie, which then made me have to start sort of back over again, but luckily, I've kind of already punched myself out. I'm on another TV show.
Which show is that?
Show called Power, mm-hmm. which is on Starz Network.
Okay, cool.
I was on season two. I start season three in like a month. And I'm actually signed on till season four. And I'm going to do a couple of weeks on Clint Eastwood's next movie, which wow. is about Sully, the pilot who landed the plane in the Hudson River. And everyone survived.
And first of all, working for Clint Eastwood is an actor's dream.
Dream.
From what I've heard, because it's one or two takes and you're done.
And he's off curling cinder blocks somewhere. Yeah.
I had an audition once. I'm not good at auditions. I don't like them.
They all suck.
They all suck.
They're horrible.
And I said, you know, unless it's Steven Spielberg calling, right. I'm not going for an audition. And lo and behold, I got an audition from Eastwood for an American Sniper.
You'd be good in Sniper,
well,
man.
Yeah, man. But I was like, all right, I'll go. And I was like, why is this happening? For some reason, I don't know why. And you know how this town is. Don't ask. For some reason, I got in Clint Eastwood's box, and he's like, Clint wants to see you.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So I go in for this audition, and it's for the drill sergeant that sprays the yep. water on Bradley Cooper. And in the back of the room, there he is, Clint Eastwood.
God.
Do your scene. Do it this way. Do it that way. Thank you very much. And leave. Didn't get the part. It went to an African-American cat, so maybe they're looking for a black guy, which is fine.
But you're right. Once you're in that circle, you're in, because I auditioned for, I think I might have auditioned for American Sniper as well for the
maybe
role.
For the drill sergeant.
No. For it was the character who Bradley Cooper kind of saved and then sees years later.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
With
yeah.
the prosthetic leg.
Yes.
One
yes,
scene.
Yes, yes.
Didn't get it. But then I got brought in for Jersey Boys, and I had to sing, which I'm not a singer. So I had to sing.
That would have been good. That's a good part for you.
And they were kind of figuring out, are they going to use like the Broadway Jersey Boy guys? Are going to cast actors and fake the singing? Didn't get that.
What did they end up doing with that?
I think they went with the actual
Broadway guys. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I basically go in for a small part in every Clint Eastwood movie. And it just so happened this one finally,
and you got
he was
it.
Like, yeah, this guy is fine. Cast him, you know?
That's going to be.
But you're right. You'll go in. I mean, he's going to bring you in for.
And that was, yeah, just
you're
one
in.
Of those things where, okay, like whatever it takes, just that's
Clint
that's
likes
cool.
you. He likes your face.
Yeah, he likes your face. And, but another thing you do, too, is you got a podcast.
Yes.
Bad for Business. And I was doing some research, as you can see in my list of questions, which is a blank piece of paper. But I actually looked it up, and I was looking through the episodes, and your show is a lot like mine. It's very diverse. You got
yes.
a lot of different topics. You bring your family members on. And there's a lot. You've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, it's a year and a half now. The reason why, first and foremost, I've always had a love for radio.
Mm-hmm.
Sports talk radio when I was a kid. Like, I didn't have a TV in my room. Like, I would go to sleep listening to sports talk radio and then Howard Stern. And I just love it. I always have and I always will. And then, I don't have to tell you, but the podcast game now, I'm not saying it's easy because it is a lot of work, but you could kind of have your own show.
It's replacing terrestrial radio.
It really is.
Yeah, it is.
And whether you have 500 listeners, 5,000, 500,000, you could still have your version of an audience.
Yeah.
And
build your own audience and talk about whatever you want.
Whatever you want. And for the first time, Chris, like, you know, we were talking about acting and stuff. I have zero control of acting.
Right.
Like,
here's your script.
I have to wake up tomorrow. I can't wake up tomorrow and be like, I feel like acting tomorrow. Unless I go to some weird acting class.
Yeah.
I have to wait around for someone to tell me it's okay for me to do what I love, which I respect because I've earned that right. But also I still have to go fight this form of podcasting. If I have something I want to wake up, like if I want to go talk about Floyd Mayweather and the possibility that he took a needle for fluids, mm-hmm. I wake up tomorrow and do an hour on that, and I have a cool audience waiting to hear it.
Right.
And it was just nice to have that ability.
It's great being in charge of everything. You
yeah,
know?
Just That's, switch it on.
Yeah. If I love wrestling, music, movies,
yeah.
acting, you know, paranormal stuff.
Right.
If I want to get a ghost
right.
hunter on, I'll damn well get one. And if you build your audience properly, they'll follow Jerry. They'll
100%.
Follow Chris. They're not going to worry about, oh, what's the topic today? Just put it on. We know we'll like it because we like you. Or we like, you know,
and you know,
host.
Like I obviously only knew you from wrestling years ago,
yeah.
you know, but through your podcast, I've learned so much more about you that I didn't know. You know what I mean?
And that's the good thing about it.
Yeah. You kind of could control your.
Yes. And build your brand, which in this day and age, you know, talking about how it works in Hollywood and in entertainment in general. Who knows when the next role could come? It could be now. You could have got a message, or it could be a month from now. But you're still producing. You're still being creative, and you're still in the public ear, I guess you'd say.
And yeah, like I also like I have a group of friends and also my family who has given me so much entertainment over the years that like now, you know, even if I'm the only person who thinks they're funny and entertaining, we're gonna test that theory.
Right.
I think my mom is the funniest person.
And she's been on quite a bit.
Like the most than anyone. Like literally, I just did a whole podcast with her because she was a single mom. Her husband, my father, passed away when I was 5. My brother was 9. And like I always say, I throw like a girl because my mom taught me how to throw straight up. I have the worst arm in the world. I throw like a girl, and I like to think I'm athletic.
Right.
So we talked. We did an hour on just her being a single mom, and like when we heard the scary noise at night, mom was the one with the bat going out to see what it was, and that's
but
why
see, that's cool yeah. stuff. I'd rather hear that than you know than going to talk to some third string actress or whatever.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Who else have you had on that you enjoyed having on?
Well, we did have Rhonda on.
Okay.
We had Rhonda on right after she did Entourage. You know, I've had my brother on where he talks about his going bald at 21 years old. And again, he basically has a stand-up routine about it. He's like, you know what it's like to lose all your hair at a young age? It's like you literally, it's like walking outside with your zipper open and your penis out every day. You feel like people are just looking at you like, wait, is that really like that?
It's like Joris Costanza, bald,
exactly.
bald.
And he had like a thick, beautiful. He was like famous in Brooklyn for his hair. He had a different hairdo every day.
Oh, the irony.
Left part, right part, side, middle part. He had it all. One day I remember I just came down the stairs at my grandmother's house and I had the overhead look. And I must have been like 15. I'm like, hey, bro, why does the back of your head looks like a bird's nest? And he went, what? And he ran home with 8 mirrors and discovered It was gone.
Bald spot.
Bald spot.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the funniest stuff. You know, I do the same with my cousins, my best friend. My kids are on all the time. People like that because it's something they don't always get to hear.
Yeah, and it's a lot of stuff, too, like that I just talk about at dinner with my friends. Like, we, one night at dinner, we were always talking gangster movies and favorite gangster lines. And we basically did, like, a fantasy draft of gangster characters. Like, if you were starting the Jericho family, and you could use any gangster mob movie of all time, like Who's Your Boss?
Who's your great.
Like my boss was young Vito Corleone, the De Niro one.
Okay.
My underboss was like Paulie from Goodfellas.
I'm going with Brando.
Brando, not a bad choice.
So the underboss was who'd you say you took?
Mine was Paulie from Goodfellas. Okay. I don't know if you remember him.
Is that Ray Liotta?
No, that's Paul Sorvino, the kind of older guy.
Gotcha.
One of my buddies picked Bill the Butcher from Gangs in New York.
All right,
and then we had like three enforcers.
So where does Joe Pesci from Goodfellas go?
He could be like a soldier.
Yeah, he's
for
sure.
Joe Pesci in Casino was one of my enforcers, if you remember Nicky Santoro.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a whole episode. That is people's favorite episode, and that's just a dumb thing that my friends and I would talk about.
That's a great idea, though.
Yeah.
See, that's the secret. If you can get, like, I love having guests on, and I try and talk just about different stuff, because right. obviously we're going to talk Entourage. That's what you're
doing for. Sure.
But it's fun to talk about the other little ancillary things and keeping your mind open as to, you know, what. Okay, you mentioned boxing, Floyd Mayweather. Okay, let's talk about this. And then you get a little bit of extra stuff. That's the fun part about it. You know,
my girlfriend, who also happens to be the producer of the podcast.
That's why it's called Bad for Business.
Like, I never realized how much I love to hear myself talk until she pointed it out. I swear to God, like, it was kind of her idea to do a podcast. She's like, I had done some sports talk radio, but she's like, you talk so much. I'm like, no, I don't. She's like, Jerry, trust me, you do. You really, really
you
do.
You should go put this to good use.
Yeah, like, you have the gift of gab. Go do it, so this way you don't talk to me as much. Maybe
someone will care.
Right, exactly.
Last question. What is your favorite episode of Entourage? Can you pick one? People always ask me what's your favorite match, and I have to think, like, maybe this one, maybe that one.
Do you know exactly how many matches? Do you know your running total?
You know what? It's
total?
Funny. Good question. That's a great question. You're a host here.
That's what I would ask you.
When I was training, I asked a guy called Keith Hart, Bret Hart's brother, mm-hmm. who was the trainer who showed up for one day. And I said, how many matches have you had? He said, I don't know. And I was thinking, that's weird, because if I want to know how many hockey games Wayne Gretzky played, I can go read it in a book. If I want to know how many games Jerry Rice played or how many yards he rushed or whatever. So from that day, I started writing down my matches, date, what number of match, who it was against, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Smart.
And still have that paper from October 3rd, 1990 up until today. And I think I've had, I'm not sure the exact number because I've had a couple matches I haven't added up yet, but it's around 2653 or something like that.
My
you know,
God.
And it makes me laugh sometimes. People go, I've had 5,000 matches. Like, no, you haven't. No,
yeah.
No.
Because you wrestled twice as much as I, as
yeah,
you
exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, if I was having a guess, I'd probably say, oh, I've had 10,000 matches, but I've actually written them down and it's about 2,600.
Did you start that from the minute you were?
From the minute, the very first night I had my first match, came home.
I'm so glad you did that.
And wrote that down. So I have this yellowed, orangey piece of paper that's existed for 25 years with that on it.
Well, because now that's also like, because sports are all about how we measure stuff.
Yes.
And now we actually have something, like you said, we have something to measure
yes.
against. We could look at a wrestler and be like, hey,
yeah,
but he fought 2,600 matches.
I still have to go get it printed out by his, you know, take it to a secretary, whoever the hell does
right.
that shit, and get them to type it all in there. Because if I ever lost this, it's in a binder now, I'd
dude, you
cry.
Could sell that. I would buy that. Like, if you did, like as like a piece of art and did, like, prints of that, I would buy that and hang it
I
in the podcast studio. You
I should
absolutely
do that.
Should.
I was going to do it. I've written some books, and I was going to put it in the back as an appendix.
Yeah.
But I run out of pages all the time, run out of room. So
that's
I'll have
awesome.
To try and do that. But what favorite Entourage
episode? Well, let's see. We did 98. A lot easier to count than 2653. For me, we did an episode in season 2 at the Sundance Film Festival, which to me is my most favorite because, number one, is the first time we left L.A. to do an episode, which kind of became our trademark after that. Every season we'd go somewhere.
You'd go
it was
somewhere.
Vegas. We went to the Cannes Film Festival, New York. Every year there'd be a road week.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time we ever did it and first time I ever went to the Sundance Film Festival, so I had only heard stories about the parties and whatnot. So I just have very fond memories of that trip of like going skiing with the guys and stuff like that. And also, there's a very famous part of Kevin Dillon's character and I. We have a threesome where we cross swords. We say,
that's right,
"Hey, how many people?" That's something people love to talk about when they come up to me. Like, "Oh, you and drama cross swords."
Yeah. Of course, they're speaking in a New York accent,
yeah,
of right? Course.
Yeah, right. That's like my that's like my default.
How you doing?
Person that always comes to talk to me. Like,
right.
I would have to put that one up as my number one, but I can make arguments for others. But that's the first one that comes to mind all the time for me.
Are you a sneaker fan as well, like Turtle was? I see you got some nice Jordans.
Yeah, you know what? I am. I used to be a tremendous sneakerhead when I was younger, and then as Entourage started, and then I kind of just got away from it, and I wasn't until recently I'm now back in. I'm back in the sneaker game.
All the way
back after like a 5-year break. So
you have to hook me up on that, man. I'm not a sneaker guy.
Anytime, Chris. That's right, easy.
Man. Dude, this Bad for Business, Jerry Ferrara. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks to Jerry Ferrara. Great hang, great guy. Came all the way to the Beverly Hills Hilton to come hang out with me. Two strangers on a train, man. And what a great conversation we had. If you want to listen to more conversations that are amazing, listen to Jerry's Bad for Business podcast. You can find it on iTunes or b4bent.com. That's number, letter. What's the alphabet? Oh, those are letters. Thanks, Chris. Letter B, number 4, BENT.com. b4bent.com. Bad for Business is the podcast. Also, check him out on his new TV show called Power on the Starz Network. Check out the Entourage movie on demand. He does a great job. He's a great actor and a really cool guy. Thanks to Jerry. Thanks to all of you for listening. And thanks for all of you for coming to Saudi Arabia last week. What a crazy trip that was. I should probably tell you about that maybe next week. Going international again, this time staying in North America, though. Heading over to Mexico. We're going to a little WWE Mexican tour tonight, Friday, October 16th. In Merida. Tomorrow, my old stomping grounds in Mexico City. Sunday, my other oldest stomping grounds in Monterrey, Mexico. Read all about those experiences in A Lion's Tale. And after that, I'm done with the WWE. Y2J fall tour is over. And then I don't know when I'm coming back. Will I return? I'm not sure, but I will be busy with the Foz as we go on the Kiss Cruise with Fozzy. Heading up from Miami to Jamaica with the Kiss Navy on October 30th. That is sold out. If you're going to be on the cruise, get ready to rock. We're going to have a blast. But here's what's not sold out yet. Still tickets available for the Cinderblock Party in Europe. Fozzy is returning to Europe, the UK, with Nonpoint Sumo Cycle. This is going to be one of the best shows, the best tour packages we've ever had. If you've ever seen Fozzy in the past, you are going to love this. Go to FozzyRock.com. Check out all the dates. We start November 13th in Rotterdam. Head all throughout mainland Europe. Then head over to the UK. London, November 26th at the Islington Academy. Southampton, Manchester, Birmingham. So many different gigs. FozzyRock.com. Go check it out. Come see Fozzy. We're going to rock your socks off. I was writing some new songs this week. Rich Ward writing some new songs. We are going to do this tour. Bang out the Kiss Cruise. Go on the Cinderblock Party tour, and then it's new album time. All right, so much to discuss. For all of you sending those amazing emails to talkisjericho@gmail.com. First up, Wayne wrote in to say he's been listening to the podcast for a few months, can't get enough of it, wondering any chance of me doing a podcast with Halloween. I was just talking about that with my buddy John Riot over in the US. I would love to do a podcast with Halloween, and stay tuned for that. A great band that's been doing this for 30 years, pioneers in their field from Germany. I would love to have them on, so I'll be working on that. Another shout out to Anthony Adams in Seattle, aka DJ A. Adams, wrote in to say he still buys CDs. Wow, you're one of the few. He bought the new Slash and the Conspirators album, World on Fire, after listening to the Slash episodes of Talk is Jericho. He's also a Fozzy fan, spins Lights Go Out whenever he DJs at the Emerald Downs Horse Race track. Thanks, dude. I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being a fan. And also, Lane Forrester hit me up at Talk is Jericho and loves New Japan Pro Wrestling and Shinsuke Nakamura, and loves the show as well. So thank you to Lane for digging that as well. Don't know much about Nakamura. Heard he's really, really good. Haven't wrestled him before, but maybe someday. All right. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to Talk is Jericho. Keep the questions and comments coming. And thanks to all of you for supporting my sponsors who helped me do this show for free for twice a week. NatureBox.com, promo code Jericho. Get delicious snacks delivered to your front door. DraftKings.com, promo code Y2J to play for free. Then there's Uber, there's TrueCar, there's Amazon. Support all of those sponsors. Support Amazon. I got links for the USA, the UK, the Canada A. Whenever you're going to buy something on Amazon, first of all, go to podcastone.com. Click on the Support Our Show sponsors banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. They just kick back a few bucks when you spend money with them to help this show. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate all of you, man. Thank you so much to Jerry Ferrara. Thanks so much to the Dudley Boys. If you haven't listened to that podcast, it's great. And don't forget the Jericho 25th anniversary, one of the funniest podcasts I've ever done in my life. Go check it out. Thank you so much for being here. Next week, I want you to sit back and relax. I got the lead singer from Extreme, Gary Cherone, is here. Also was the third and forgotten lead singer of Van Halen. Gary's got some great Eddie Van Halen stories, David Lee Roth stories, Sammy Hagar stories, Nuno Betancourt stories. He's got his new album by his new band, Hurt Smile. We talk rock and roll with one of the nicest guys I've had on the show in a long time. Gary Cherone will be here. I'll see you on Wednesday. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Wah, 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 wah.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.